Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Ranking of the Stars, a podcast in which I, Jack Diallo-Boblick, and my lovely, luscious, let's-never-speak-of-this-again wife...
Hi, I'm Emmeline Diallo-Boblick.
...watch in chronological order every single movie that has won the Oscar for Best Picture, and this week's... movie... is...
Tom Jones.
Alternate title, Take Me Sweet Death, I Await Your Loving Embrace.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Or, I came up with multiple ones because no single title was enough to contain my feelings for this thing.
Oh boy.
The other title is, I Can't Believe I Miss Watching Gigi.
Yep.
Poster.
Poster.
This is a good poster.
Yeah.
This is a great poster.
This is pretty much just the only good thing about this movie.
Far and away the best thing about this movie. It's
white background.
It's a drawing.
Yeah.
Of a man with his arms wearing a stereotypical like Fabio shirt, open chest. His hands are raised in celebration. There's a bunch of babes all grabbing onto his legs.
Yeah.
A la Conan the Barbarian. But he's not a barbarian. He's a very just roguish-looking chap.
And in big letters, it says, the whole world loves Tom Jones.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, not me, but these ladies sure do.
Yep. I think that's all the ladies he bones in the movie.
I believe so.
They can't keep their hands off him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's far more good looking on this poster than he is in the movie. But
you think? You can barely distinguish his features on this poster.
I get hints of like young, Dirty Dancing era Patrick Swayze.
How can you get anything? His face is just a featureless blob.
I see it.
He looks like David Hasselhoff to me.
David Hasselhoff. Young David Hasselhoff and Patrick Swayze kind of look alike.
I mean, but what he really looks like is somebody just smeared a booger on where his face should be.
All right, let's get through it.
Yay for all these babes, he says.
Yay. Let's get through it. Information about the movie. This is a yet another novel adaptation.
Yes.
It's the adaptation of a 1749 novel written by Henry Fielding entitled The History of Tom Jones, A Fondling.
Yep, the first red flag is a story from the long, long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the history of Tom Jones, Jesus Christ.
From the 1700s, woof.
Yep. The movie was produced by Woodfall Film Productions and distributed by United Artists. It was released on June 26, 1963. The running time is 128 minutes. The budget at the time was around 480,000 British pounds.
Take note, audience, of how low this budget is compared to every other movie we have watched.
I repeat, 480,000 British pounds was the budget. The movie made over $17 million.
And you want to know why? I'll just spoil this for you right now, audience. It's because of titties. That's it.
But there are no titties.
There aren't even any actual titties. It's just cleavage.
Yes.
That's it. That was worth $17 million.
Apparently.
And a Best Picture win.
Yep.
Literally the best picture that got put up on the screen, I guess. They were taking this thing a little too literally.
I mean, it's definitely out there. It's different from any of the movies that we've watched so far.
Yep.
It's definitely the more risque movie we've watched.
It's the lowest brow, certainly.
Yes. Yes. Definitely.
Yep.
But I'm sure it was like promising at the time for what could be coming.
I think the rich shits in the Academy just discovered what fart jokes were.
Maybe.
And what boobs were with this movie. And they said, good heavens, could people always take their clothes off? What else don't we know about? Give this thing an award.
It will encourage them.
Yeah. Okay. You can take your pants off?
All right.
Yep.
Characters and actors?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we have Albert Finney, who plays Tom Jones.
Yep.
We have George Devine, who plays Squire Allworthy.
We're never going to see any of these people ever again.
Fuck no, I hope not.
These are all just on a way lower tier than every other person.
Yeah. Also, they're all British actors and probably not even members of like Hollywood or anything. Like, this is they're like 15 minutes of fame.
Yes, this was a fluke. This whole thing was a fluke.
Yeah, yeah. Squire Allworthy has a sister named Bridget. She's played by Rachel Kempson. And her son, Mr. Blifil, is played by David Warner.
Who I just refer to as nephew in the synopsis. Nephew.
Blifil. How else?
There are very few people in the synopsis that get actual names. It is nephew and love interest. And love interest father I call Isaac Newton.
Oh my gosh. That's
exactly who he looks like with his big ass wig.
Yeah, I can see that.
He has the exact same hair as Isaac Newton.
Speaking of love interest, Miss Sophie Western is played by Susanna York. She's the main love interest.
She didn't even have a picture on like the cast.
Really?
You know how on Amazon there's a little tab where you can look at the cast?
Yeah.
The main love interest of this movie didn't even have a profile shot.
Oh, Jesus. Her father, Squire Western, is played by Hugh Griffith. And Sophie's cousin, Mrs. Fitzpatrick, is played by Rosalind Knight. We also have there's a lot of characters, but
Women who all look alike.
Yes.
I legitimately got lost in the plot.
Who's this?
Yes, who is this? Oh, I thought she was the other lady. Wow, okay.
Yeah. Two more characters. We have Joyce Redman, who plays Jenny Jones, and Jack McGowan, who plays Mr. Partridge.
Who looks a little bit like an old, worse for wear Adrian Brody to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. A little squished, little rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Hasn't shaved in a few days.
The sharp jaw and the nose, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely. Fun facts?
I protest.
Is there anything fun?
I protest to anything associated with this movie being called fun, but go ahead.
One and singular fun fact I am willing to give about this movie. The director himself has criticized the movie, saying in his autobiography that he thought, quote, the movie to be incomplete and botched in much of its execution. I am not knocking that kind of success. Everyone should have it. But whenever someone gushes to me about Tom Jones, I always cringe a little inside. End quote.
Same. Who the hell is gushing about this movie?
Crazy people.
Yes. I cannot fathom the kind of person that would enjoy this.
People who have weird concept of art about what an artistic endeavor looks like.
People who have a completely backward sense of humor.
Who never
developed past the age of 12 mentally.
Probably. Definitely. All right. It was nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Actor for Albert Finney.
No.
Best Supporting Actor for Hugh Griffith.
No.
Best Supporting Actresses for 3 of the actresses in the movie, including Joyce Redman.
3 times no.
And Best Art Direction in Color.
What art? No.
What direction?
Yeah. No to all of this.
And it won 4 Academy Awards.
Oh my god.
For Best Picture, Best Director for Tony Richardson, Best Screenplay based on another medium.
Somebody had some blackmail on something else. Somebody knew whose wife was getting boned. Somebody had some pictures.
It's the 60s, man. They're starting to get high.
They knew who was doing what. Booger Sugar. And they say, hey, man, you don't give these awards to this movie. I'm going to leak everything to the press.
There's a scene in this movie where Tom Jones is sniffing coke, yeah. I think. So maybe there was some actual coke on the set and in the viewing rooms. And the last one is for Best Musical Score.
They won for that?
Yep.
It's all just harpsichord crap.
Yep.
It's somebody just banging their head into a harpsichord.
Yep.
Fuck, I could win for best music. That's what I'm learning.
Finally, the loser's bracket of 1963 includes America, America.
Sure.
Cleopatra.
Coming at ya.
How the West Was Won.
Yikes.
And Lilies of the Field.
I mean, I'd take anything over Tom Jones after seeing it.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
So, chef's choice. Give me anything.
I would take Cleopatra or How the West Was Won.
Yep. Anything. I don't care.
Yep.
Nothing is worse than this.
Let's go. Let's do it. Let's just get through the synopsis and get it over with.
The plot. All right. Rip the Band-Aid off. Here we go. Opening narration. In the west of England, there was once a Squire Allworthy. This is not a person talking. For the first 5 minutes of this movie, inexplicably, it pretends to be a silent film where we cut to the placards with the text on them mm-hmm. when people move their mouths.
Yeah. Also, right at the beginning of the movie, when this started, the music, the style, reminded us both of either Benny Hill or Mr. Bean.
Yep. Very. It's trying for that style of British comedy,
yeah,
but falls so fucking hard on its face that it plows a hole in the earth.
Yeah. And there's like, I like a lot of like British comedy. I like a lot of British comedian, but this is like by far the worst kind of British comedy.
Yeah, Monty Python's great. Yeah. All-time classics. This is not Monty Python.
Far from it.
So the opening narration text told us that in west of England there was once a Squire Allworthy. After several months in London, he returns home. Why did we even talk about him being in London? Horse-pulled carriage. We see a horse-pulled carriage arrive at a manor. And then the text says, his sister. And we see his sister Bridget. And then his servants. And we get a way too close-up shot of all the servants.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of way too close-up shots in this movie. Where you cannot see...
You cannot unsee what you've seen.
You cannot see 90% of the person because the shot is just like the top of their head and part of their eyeball. He gets out of the carriage and hugs his sister, and then the narration. After supper, he kisses his sister goodnight. We're like looking at them through a little hole in the wall.
Yep.
And then heads upstairs to bed, and we get the one clever bit in the movie where he just walks behind a wall in his daytime clothes, and then when he comes out the other side, he's in his nightgown.
Yep.
Clever little gag. That is the end of the enjoyment of this movie. I hope you liked it. The West is a barren fucking wasteland. He's got like Ebenezer Scrooge pajamas because it's 1700. He's like holding a candle as he walks to the bed. It's all stuff like that. And then he finds something in his bed. He calls for the head maid, who comes in and is scandalized because his gown has ridden up a tiny little bit and you can see his upper thighs. Not his butt or anything, just his upper thighs. And she goes, eee! Because that's the level of humor in this movie. He pulls her back in, though, and brings her to the bed, wherein lies an abandoned baby.
A baby!
A baby in his bed. Who is the mother? Asks the narration. Allworthy's sister has joined them by then, and the three conclude, with zero evidence, that the mother must be Jenny Jones, and the father must be Partridge the Barber. They just turn to each other and say, it must be them! That's it.
Yep.
The two are brought before the scowling Allworthy, who banishes them from his house for this degradation and says he will raise the boy as his own, just steals their kid from them because he's the master of the house. You can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but also, like, what degradation? The only degradation is that they're not married.
It's 1700s in England. They're prudes already, and this is the height of prudishness. So, sex, I hate it. It's awful. Burn them at the stake. They touched a penis. Kill them. The pair are dragged away, and Allworthy's sister asks what he will name the boy. Take note of this. It will come up later. He says, Tom Jones is what he will name them.
Yeah.
Name the boy. And the narration text cuts in to tell us that it is the opinion of everyone that Tom was born to be hanged.
Mm-hmm.
Garbage from the start, says the narration. Then we get opening credits over a close-up shot of the baby holding Allworthy and his sister's fingers. It just lingers on that baby for like 5 minutes,
yeah.
Which is fine with me. It's a cute baby.
Yeah, it is a cute baby.
And I always like watching babies in TV and movies because babies aren't acting.
Yeah.
They have no idea
there's no way they could act.
Yeah, they have no idea what's going on, so they're just being honest. They're just, what, huh? What? Huh?
Huh?
Yeah, he's just holding both their fingers, and you just sit on this baby for like 5 minutes while the credits go over him.
If this movie had been 2 hours of just looking at this baby, it would have been much better.
It would have been way better. Then voice narration tells us that our hero grew apace, more comfortable in the woods than the study, and sure enough, we see him as a grown man walking through the woods. He is a bad hero, the voice narration continues, with many faults. But if Adam had no faults, we wouldn't be hearing this story at all. As Tom walks, a nymph rises up out of the bushes. Tom walks over, and they fall to the ground together behind some bushes, conveniently blocking the camera's view. And the narrator comes back to inform us that it will be our custom to leave such scenes as taste and the senses dictate. Our first instance of breaking the fourth wall, this movie thinks it is the height of comedy to just address the audience directly.
That's the first instance.
Huh?
What do you mean it's the first instance?
In this movie, in the entire podcast.
Yeah.
This movie loves to wink at the camera and thinks it is fucking hilarious. Are you dying of laughter yet?
Not quite.
And she's the forest nymph has this like little leaf and she's like, oh, are you out hunting for something? And then he comes over and then they start banging. Fade to black. We come back to Tom with the girl's father hunting game. They trespass on some lord's land and get shot at while wacky hijinks type music plays. They hunted some animal that was not on their property. Just one of a million scenes in this movie that has nothing to do with anything and is not connected to anything further on. Then we're introduced to Tom's instructors and told they have very little luck in trying to teach him, but have had a much better pupil in the son of Allworthy's sister, who was sober and studious beyond his age and was praised by all.
And he looks like he's got a fucking broomstick up his ass.
And he got a very cheap wig on because the low budget of this movie, all the costumes are cheap looking. The wigs are obvious. The costumes are frumpled and old. This guy has acne in his face. They can't even afford makeup to cover it up.
Yep. Which, I was wondering if this was like actual acne or if it was a little bit of makeup, but I think it's actual acne.
They don't have the budget to afford good wigs. They're not going to put on prosthetic acne.
Probably not. It's also the 60s. They don't have good enough makeup to make it look like real acne.
Yeah, so. This is Mr. Bliffle, who I refer to as nephew. He is just your garden variety of teacher's pet, tries way too hard, no fun.
Yeah, he's a jerk too.
Yep. Then we're back in the woods where Tom is banging the wood nymph again, and she tells him she wants to get him to get her a post, like a job, like pull some strings, get me a job.
I almost thought she said get me a poster, but not get me a post.
Man, posters did not exist yet.
Nope.
She still has her little feather leaf though.
Mm-hmm.
It's her permanent prop. Then we're at a wooden bridge on the surface of a lake with swans swimming to and fro on the surface of the pond. A young blonde woman in a dress leans on the railing of the bridge and then is approached by Tom, who has captured a thrush for her, a little bird he has put in a cage. This is love interest.
Yep.
Whose entire personality is love interest.
Sophie Western.
Yep. She's just returned from London, apparently, and she loves the bird. They flirt a bit, and she says something in French that you could not discern at first.
At first. Yep. We had to actually put on the subtitles, because her French was very bad.
I'm shocked. Everything else in this is so high quality.
She says, oui, je me suis très bien amusée, which I had a lot of fun.
She had a lot of fun.
What, she's coming back from London?
Yes, but she says she spent more time in France with her aunt or something.
Yeah, she spent about 2 years in France, I think.
I don't fucking know. Nothing in this movie matters. They flirt a bit, and then Tom asks if she can give the wood nymph a job. It's hard on the wood nymph's father with so many hungry daughters to feed. And he says, I know how hungry they are. And he wiggles his eyebrows at the camera. Yeah, sure, whatever, says the love interest. Next scene is the pair arriving at love interest's estate, where her father, Sir Isaac Newton, because his wig is exactly that of Sir Isaac Newton, that humongous ringlets that go down past your shoulders, or see also the lead guitarist of Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep, that kind of hair.
This is Squire Western.
This is love interest father Sir Isaac Newton. Don't listen to her audience, she's out of her mind. So Sir Isaac Newton is there along with Allworthy, Allworthy's sister and his nephew, and they greet Tom and the love interest. The bird in the cage is handed to the nephew, who takes it out while everyone is chatting and throws the bird away, because he's jealous of the attention Tom is getting. It lands in a nearby tree, and Tom climbs up the tree and gets it, but once he grabs it, falls into the pond underneath, and we do get a camera shot of, like, the camera on the branch as mm-hmm. Tom gets closer to the camera. There is, I wouldn't call it good camera work in this movie. It's what it is that this is such a low budget, cheap production that we just get angles that you wouldn't see other experienced people producing.
Yeah.
So it ironically becomes kind of a breath of fresh air, like camera editing wise.
And experimental work.
But it's only because it's so sloppy that no one else would ever try and do this stuff in the other higher production stuff we've seen.
Yeah.
So he falls into the pond underneath the tree, and then the nephew mutters, serves him right, and is pushed into the pond by the love interest, and everyone laughs. Yuck, yuck, yuck. He got his wig all wet. Then we're in church, and the narrator tells us that the weeks pass, and the nymph grew apace as well, which is ye olde speak for that bitch is now pregnant. Tom sees her baby bump and tries not to panic. Oh, blah, 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 he says internally.
Yeah, he's singing in the foreground. You can see her in the background, and he's singing louder and louder.
Yep. After the service, the nymph walks out the door and is pelted with mud by the other women, much akin to How Green Was My Valley, the persecution of how dare a woman have sex outside of marriage.
Yep.
Whore, whore, they say. And this is all the other women in town,
yeah.
should we notice, that are doing this. It turns into a complete fracas, and the whole congregation gets involved. Once everyone calms down, Tom carries the nymph away in his arms and puts her on his horse. And this just, every once in a while, this movie is just gripped by the Holy Spirit, and they have to have a scene where literally every single person just loses their shit, and it turns into a madhouse cacophony of just noise and screaming. This is the first one of those.
Yep.
It will not be the last. Just cacophonous. Jump to Isaac Newton and a friend eating at his home and gossiping about the nymph having a bastard because she refuses to name Tom as the father of her child. The love interest is there as well and gets up once she hears this information about Tom. She has a headache, she says. She tries to walk past her father, but he grabs her, smacks her on the butt, and tells her to play a song.
Yeah, that was gross.
She walks over to the harpsichord, sits down, and begins to play a tune. Also, this is the beginning of another unfortunate tradition, which is gross, disgusting eating.
Yeah.
They are just digging.
Table manners are not a thing.
No, this movie has an incredibly juvenile sense of humor, including to, isn't it funny when people eat with their mouth open and have no table manners and eat so sloppily, it's just giant, like, medieval-type drumsticks where they're just, like, they're slurping and sucking on the bones and just chewing with their mouth open to the point where he even gets, like, bits of meat in his wig.
Yeah, let's move on. I could puke.
Yeah. Gross. And then smacks his daughter on the butt and tells her to play a song.
Yep.
This is a comedy. A swipe cut to Tom and a horse as the narrator tells us that the nymph's reputation was destroyed and Tom's heart was heavy with remorse. He arrives at the nymph's home and is told by her mother and sisters that she's upstairs in bed, and they all giggle knowingly. Tom lets himself into her bedroom, and she throws a chicken at him and yells at him for not coming to see her sooner. Another unfortunate tradition in this movie, rampant animal abuse.
Yeah.
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 And that was disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's not like something, obviously this is the 60s, it's not something that they could CGI or anything. Like,
nope.
Those are actual animals, they're live animals that they were throwing around, and just, it's disgusting.
Yep, not the last time, and I will point it out every instant it happens. And so this movie does not get away with this shit.
You know, no disclaimer about the animals in this movie not being hurt.
No, they didn't care. And this movie has disappeared from the public consciousness, so it's not like Gone with the Wind. It's still sticking around, so it doesn't need those disclaimers, right?
Yeah, we're the only crazy ones watching it.
Yep. She continues to yell and beats him with a pillow, but while she's swinging the pillow around, she accidentally knocks down a curtain behind her, revealing the naked man hiding behind it. The narrator speaks up and tells us that our hero, unlike many other men, was fortunate to discover the father of his child in time. Yeah. And also, the guy is naked, but he's covering up his pork and beans with the curtain. So,
of course.
So you never actually see anything. That's the other infuriating thing about this, is for as risque as it pretends to be, it's so fucking PG.
Oh, yeah.
With all that stuff.
Yeah.
Then we cut to love interest being dressed by a servant girl who gossips about Allworthy being angry at Tom over the whole pregnancy fiasco. Love interest claims she doesn't know why she's getting all this news about Tom, and the servant says, bitch, you aren't fooling anyone. Not in those words, but that's...
But that's the meaning.
That's what it amounts to. Love interest says enough about gossip, she's going to be late for the hunt. Swipe cut to the hunt, because this movie loves swipe cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every single goddamn transition in this movie is a swipe cut of some sort. Just straight across the screen, diagonal across the screen. Sometimes they do like a box just opening up from the center of the screen. Sometimes mm-hmm. they do it like a windmill pattern swirling. They love this shit. It is the coolest shit. They do it every opportunity they can.
We haven't really seen it in other movies.
It's happened once or twice, and it's usually like once.
But it's like once in the
once movie. In an entire movie. This movie does it every fucking 5 seconds. Holy shit. So we're at the hunt, and then the hunt is like 7 minutes of no dialogue. It's just people and animals everywhere. They show a kennel that has like 40 dogs in it,
mm-hmm.
all just barking and crawling all over each other. Then they let the dogs out, and it's the huge group of dogs and guys on horses, and there's like geese just walking around loose. And then they begin the hunt, which is the dogs all running in a pack through a field, and the people on the horses following them, and they're chasing some sort of...
They're chasing a doe.
A doe.
Or a deer.
It has antlers on it. A small deer-type animal.
Yeah.
And it's just like 7 fucking minutes of like aerial shots of the horses running after the dogs. And
it's
then,
very jumpy also. Like the aerial shots, the camera work in this in the sequence, it's so shaky and jumpy.
Shaky cam and really awkward cuts. It was at this point that I turned to you and said, the editing in this movie sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks.
The editing, just the camera work, the shooting, everything sucks.
They can't keep the camera stable. They don't know where to start and end a shot. And it's not high quality to begin with, so like everything's a little blurry and grainy, and none of it's interesting. It's just that the entire motivation behind the scene is, we paid for these dogs, we're gonna film these dogs, goddammit.
Yeah, but it never felt to me like there was any actual intention or intentional thinking behind what they shot and how they shot it.
Yeah. Just watch these dogs and these people charge across the field for 7 minutes. And then the end of the hunt
mm-hmm.
is the dogs all swarming the deer and
yes.
like ripping it apart. And
there are men also like ripping it apart. Like there's a man who's like lifting. He's got the head of the deer, and there's blood. There's like gushes of blood.
It is Sir Isaac Newton himself, and he picks it up by the antlers.
Yeah.
And it's a real dead deer.
Yep.
And like its tongue is hanging out of its mouth, and yeah, you can see its throat is cut. Like,
yeah.
Fuck, man.
Who would do that? Like, who would agree to doing this? Who would agree to like holding an actual like dead deer like this, and like having its neck slashed. Like, this isn't fun. This isn't art.
No, this is just devaluing life.
In more ways than one. Honestly, yeah. This is devaluing life in the movie, and this is devaluing the value of our time watching this goddamn movie.
Just the casual cruelty of this movie is just vile. Anyway.
It's not the end.
We're not even a fourth of the way through this movie.
Jesus Christ.
And for some reason, the love interest was allowed to partake in the hunt?
Yeah, it looks like she's the only woman.
Yeah, 1700s, no fucking way. No fucking way would a woman be allowed to take part in this.
Well, I mean, her father is also crazy, so...
Yeah, but he's also an incredible misogynist. So, it's allowed for plot reasons.
Sure.
As we see. At the end, the love interest's horse bolts with her on it, and Tom gives chase to save her. Save her he does, but breaks his arm in the process. How? I don't know, because he literally just goes up to the horse and just... She jumps down into his arms?
Mm-hmm.
Not even violently?
No, but he falls down, right? If I remember.
Does she weigh as much as a fucking boat?
No, she's like less than 100 pounds.
Yeah, so it's just like she drops lightly 1 foot into his arms and he's like, oh, my arm is broken. What the fuck are you talking about, movie? Is his arm made of styrofoam? But sure, his arm is broken. He tries to play it cool, but passes out from the pain. It's a small price to pay, m'lady. Because everyone we haven't mentioned talks like it's fucking in Shakespeare talk, making this even more insufferable.
I mean, this is the 1700s.
Yep. They lean into it, lean into everything in the worst possible way. Because, look, there's sexy, glamorous medieval times, right? Like you see in Game of Thrones and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's real, ugly... realistic medieval times, which is what this is, where everything is awful and everyone's covered in shit and everybody hates animals and just is awful to each other all the time.
Yeah, but this is also like a caricature.
Yes, but it's closer to reality than Game of Thrones is.
Sure.
It's like that joke from Monty Python where King Arthur walks by and they go, oh, it's a king. How do you know he's a king? Well, he doesn't have shit all over him. Because everyone in this movie has shit all over them. He is taken to the love interest's house after he passes out to recover. He wakes up to hear the servant girl yakking about what a hot hunk he is. And he grabs the love interest's hand on the sly because he keeps his eyes closed, pretends to still be sleeping. And then love interest just has her back to him, closes the bed. And oh, they hold hands. How fucking scandalous. Then we get a montage of Tom and the love interest... dating? Courting?
Yeah.
In
the terms used in Bridgerton, they are promenading in the woods.
Sure. they dance in the yard, they pick flowers together, at some point he like runs, there's no dialogue,
no.
Any of this, it's just music playing over them, and they talk but you don't get to hear it, he runs into the mud to pick a flower for her, I guess, mm-hmm. While she laughs, and you're so crazy, you've got mud on your shirt,
You do it very well.
Yeah, thank you.
You're a damsel being courted.
I'm coming down with a case of the vapors watching this man get mud on his blouse.
Good lord.
They also do a bit where they're riding on horses.
Yeah.
And it's donkeys at first. Isn't that hilarious? That's too small for a grown person. And then he goes out, he like goes out of the screen and then she's behind him, but then she goes out of the screen and then he comes back from the other side.
Yeah.
And then there are horses and he looks back like, well, how is this happening? Because it's fucking hilarious when movies know that they're movies.
Are you laughing yet?
Oh, I'm almost dead. I need the stitches in my side. Can't you see them? Call a doctor. And then they do a thing where they're smoking on a boat.
Yeah.
And then first he's laying down in the boat and smoking and she's paddling. And then it cuts to him paddling and she's laying down and smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looks right down the barrel of the camera and it freeze frames while she just looks. straight into the camera with a big old dumb grin on her face.
They might be smoking opium.
I fucking hope so. I hope somebody's having a good time in this shit fest. At the end of all this, they smooch, and then we join a scribe Allworthy and his sister in a horse-drawn carriage riding down a dirt road. The horse speeds up for no reason. Allworthy tries to slow it down to no avail. We get a shot of the wheel coming loose, and then the wheel falls off. Allworthy tumbles to the ground, and so does his sister, except she bashes her head on a rock and fucking dies.
Yep.
Another one of those very low-impact deaths, a la Gone with the Wind. And, like, they don't know how to make anything have weight to it in this era.
There's no story. There's no, like, it's just, like, a series of events. It's a series of very unfortunate events for us because it's not interesting, but it's just a series of events.
Yes, this movie's just a string of random shit happening.
Yeah.
But you're talking about narrative weight. I'm talking about the actual physical, like, weight of... That was not enough to break his arm. The girl falling off the horse and Gone with the Wind was not enough to kill her. This lady lightly falling off the carriage and, like, lightly bonking her head on a rock. She's dead. Okay, sure.
Sure. At the same time, like, when she fell and bonked her head on the stone, I was like, ugh. It happened so quickly.
Yeah, it's the quickness of... It just flashes it. It's almost like subliminal.
Yeah.
We then see Tom returning to the estate, and he is told by Nephew that Nephew's mother is dead, and Allworthy himself is not expected to live. And Tom actually hugs Nephew in this, and they seem to be getting along.
Yeah.
It will not last. Cut to the coffin of Bridget Blifil being lowered into the ground. After the service, a man approaches Nephew and says he has a letter from his late mother that was to be delivered to Squire Allworthy upon her death. Who is this man? Why does he have the letter? Fuck you, that's why. Nephew takes the letter and pockets it. Why didn't he give it to fucking Allworthy if it were for Allworthy? Allworthy wasn't at the funeral. He was laid up in bed at this time.
Yes.
I guess that's why.
Well, at first, the guy also says that he needs to give it to Allworthy, but Nephew Blifil says that he's going to recommend a new
steward,
and he couldn't recommend this guy.
Yeah, give me the letter and I'll get you a job.
Yeah.
Yep. Then we jump to Tom and Nephew kneeling at the bedside of Allworthy, who tells Nephew not to grieve. He has asked them there to tell them of his will, and all the teachers are there as well.
Everybody, all the servants and all.
Yep. His will is that Nephew inherits his estate, except for £800 a year and an immediate £1,000 in ready money for Tom. He is convinced that there is much good in Tom, he tells him as he holds his hand. He's the only one who actually believes in Tom. Next scene starts with Nephew reading out of a book to the tutors and Tom running down the stairs screaming that Allworthy has recovered and ripping curtains off the windows in his excitement.
Yeah, they had like black see-through curtains that were
morning.
To observe the mourning period for Bridget.
Yes, these are the kind of motherfuckers that have to decorate their whole house in mourning, not just wear black. And we cut right from his deathbed to Tom running down the stairs. He's recovered. Sure, movie, sure. The others aren't as excited because they won't get their inheritance now.
Well, they'll get it someday.
Sometime later, Tom is drunk. Yes, but now is not then.
I know.
Sometime later, Tom is drunk and singing with joy, and Nephew tells him to shut up because he's still in mourning for his mother. Unlike you, I knew who my parents were, he says, and Tom slaps him and pushes him down on the table before being thrown out by the tutors. They have this, they're like standing in front of the fireplace, and Tom slaps him like very lightly, almost like a testing the waters kind of slap, and then Nephew slaps him back a little harder. I thought they were just going to stand there slapping each other, but fuck me, that would have actually been a good bit, and this movie is allergic to actual humor, so they slap each other once and he just pushes them down on the table, and the tutors get all their wigs into twist and oh I say I never you cad, and then they throw him out. Tom stumbles drunkenly through the night, calling for the love interest, but stumbles upon the nymph instead. He starts, like, carving the love interest name into a tree. Her name is Sophie. He's like, Sophie, Sophie. And then the nymph is on the other side of the tree, and her name's Molly. And he goes, Molly, Molly. Yep. They start boning immediately.
Of course.
As they get down to business and we fade to black, again, the narrator tells us that if we find our hero's behavior surprising, we should remember that Tom always considered any woman better than none.
Yikes.
Uy.
Yeah, because, I mean, your hands don't do the job as well.
Yep. Pamela Henderson. Scarlett Johansson. The narrator also tells us that the nymph was of the opinion that two men were always better than one.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Uh-huh. Everybody's a whore.
And they're, if not a whore, they're all horny for sure.
The narrator, yes, from the narrator's point of view, excuse me, that is not my own opinion. The narrator considers everyone a whore.
Yeah, yeah. I got that.
He sits on his cloud and just throws down judgment upon them all. Then cut back to nephew and the tutors, who somehow know that Tom has a wench, as they call it, and run off to find him. Fucking how? How? They're at the house. They have not left since throwing him out. How the fuck do they know this man they can't see is having sex? Do they have spooky sex mind powers?
I mean, they're all religious. Jesus gave them powers.
God just rang them up and said, a penis is being touched somewhere within 50 feet. Handle that shit or I will. So they run off to find him. When they do find him, they tackle him and slap him around, and you get these really cartoonish, like, whack, bam, biff sound effects. Yeah. Until Sir Isaac Newton rides up on a horse and scares them off, because he finds Tom's wenching very endearing. He, oh, good for you, lad. You're a bit of a fox, aren't you? Har, 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 har.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Sidebar, very quickly, my head went somewhere else. You said the word penis not 2 minutes ago, and my thoughts just went to that little video of the kid. The mother is trying to say happiness, and he's like, happy penis.
Happy penis. Yes. Exactly what God hates the most.
Exactly.
They're doing what? With their what? Kill them! Love interest rides up as well, and is told to fetch some water to clean the blood off of Tom, because he's got a bloody nose from all the whooping. She heads down to the nearby stream and finds the nymph cleaning herself under the bridge. They lock eyes, and the nymph stares defiantly. Got something to say, bitch? She says with her eyes. The love interest says nothing and walks away without a word. And I think that's the last we ever see the nymph.
I believe so.
Yep, yep. They come and go. Back with Tom, Isaac Newton laughs and asks where his pussy is. And then walks around calling out for Tom's pussy. Are we laughing yet? Love interest walks up and slaps Tom in the face. Then they go to Isaac's estate, where his sister's carriage is parked outside. Isaac's sister.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac hopes that bitch has gone to bed already, so he doesn't have to talk to her. He hates his sister, as we shall soon see. Inside, they find out that she has not gone to bed, and her and Isaac insult each other for a few minutes. This happens every fucking time they talk to each other, which is a lot.
Yeah.
The movie seems to think that the fact that they hate each other is hilarious, and will take any opportunity to revisit this evergreen joke. Fear not, we will be back here again many times.
Mm.
And it sucks, because let me just demonstrate what every interaction between them sounds like. For 5 fucking minutes. This is a comedy. This movie's hilarious. Because she is the return of that...
The school marm.
The school marm, which was a trope I thought we had left behind. Here it is from the grave. She's bringing it back. Thank you, Tom Jones. Thank you for all you've done for us. The next day, the sister finds Isaac Newton in the farmyard surrounded by animals and informs him that unless she is deceived, her niece is desperately in love. Without my consent, booms Isaac and storms around the yard yelling and upsetting all the animals. She can love whom she pleases, but she'll marry the man I choose, he says. His sister says she's fallen in love with a man he would want her to anyway. The nephew, Mr. Bliffle, is what she thinks. Isaac should go propose the match to Allworthy right away, which Isaac loves because it means he would get to be legally bound to Allworthy's estate. Allworthy has more money than him. Swipe cut to Allworthy asking nephew how he feels about the marriage. Nephew says that love interest is a babe and he likes the idea. I look forward to the benefits of holy matrimony, he says. Then we jump to Isaac's sister finding love interest sitting by the pond with the swans and telling her to get ready. Her lover is coming to visit. Love interest is joyously happy at first until she figures out that the lover in question is nephew and not Tom. Her aunt is scandalized that she would love a bastard, and they yell at each other about it for a few minutes. I would sooner die, says the schoolmarm, than see our family disgraced by the taint of a bastard.
Yep.
Then we cut to love interest yelling at her father about the marriage in the farmyard. I won't marry that idiot, she says. To force her to do so would be to kill her. Then die and be damned, yells her father. Love interest runs away sobbing, and then Tom shows up for no reason, and Isaac tells him to go see if he can calm love interest down, and then splashes his drink in a dog's face.
Yeah.
Fuck this guy. Fuck this movie.
For no reason.
Casual anal abuse.
Yeah.
This is a comedy.
And I know, like, a lot of people are going to say, oh, this is, it's the least abuse that you could do, just like throwing water or whatever. But the dog didn't ask for it.
Animals are innocent.
Yes.
Any cruelty towards them is the vilest shit.
They're usually like aggressive or violent when you're aggressive and violent to them.
Yep. And the poor dog, he just
happened to walk around.
He was just near the guy, and he gets the thing splashed his face, and just like shakes his head, and is like, "What the fuck? Why?"
Yeah.
Ugh. Tom finds love interest, who tells him to run away before her father finds out she loves him. But it's too late. Isaac has found out from his sister and comes looking for Tom with a whip in his hand. She goes, "You fool! It's Tom's the one she loves." I've cut out so many fucking laborious dialogue scenes from this synopsis, where people just have to explain basic facts to each other,
yeah.
And they always just do it in the most roundabout, slow-ass way possible. This movie is exhausting. It's like watching snails crawl through molasses. Tom runs away, and Isaac goes to complain to Allworthy and tells him he'll chop Tom's dick off if he goes near love interest again. Then his horse rolls over backwards on him because he was drunk.
Yeah, which was another type to me of animal, of mistreatment,
yeah.
of the animal, because... the horse is not being handled properly, and B, like, yeah, you're handling it in a way that is making him fall.
Yeah, it's rolling, it's doing a backwards somersault.
Yeah.
So it's going to end up on its neck.
Yeah. I felt so bad.
The only enjoyment you can get out of this scene is that maybe the guy got crushed underneath the horse and it hurt him more than it did the animal.
Yeah, but also, like, knowing that this is meant to make people laugh because the guy is falling off the horse, it makes everything worse.
Yeah, this movie has a very cruel sense of humor. It's very mean-spirited in everything, and it's just gross.
Yeah.
Then we get a succession of scenes where the tutors try to convince Allworthy that Tom should be expelled from the house, and Isaac's sister tries to convince the love interest that marrying nephew isn't that bad. We get a line about love interest said she doesn't actually love nephew to the school marm, and the school marm replies, well, I know dozens of marriages where they hate each other, but they can still live a very genteel and comfortable life.
Yeah.
This isn't about love, you idiot. This is about money.
I mean, to be fair, marriages in that time period are mostly just financial arrangements.
Yes, marriage start out as financial and legal, like the joining of houses is what it is.
It's like, how much money do you have? Can we combine our resources?
Yes, marriage actually being about love is a fairly modern invention.
Yeah.
In the end, Allworthy is convinced and send Tom's off with some cash, but love interest is not swayed. We see Tom hugging all the servants who are gathered to see him off, and then join nephew and love interest as they walk side by side. Nephew tells her he's looking forward to the bliss of holy matrimony, wink wink nudge nudge, and grabs her without asking. She smacks his hand away and leaves. Then we see Isaac laying at the base of a hay pile as his sister yells at him again. Not the first time, not the last. It's hilarious. He farts as he gets up. That is the level we've sunk to. Fart jokes. And says he's going to lock love interest up in a tower. He finds her, grabs her, and drags her kicking and screaming to the tower. Then we join Tom on the road as he comes across a group of British soldiers camping. He's invited to join their march and gladly accepts. We jump to Tom and the soldiers all sitting around a table at an inn, and one of the soldiers asks Tom if he's ever been to university. Tom replies that his life has been so far from university, he's never gone to school. Neither have I, laughs the barmaid. Yuck, yuck, yuck. The soldier mocks him for it, and Tom replies that it's just as easy for a man to have not been at school and know something as it is for a man to go to school and know nothing. Goddamn, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yep.
True.
Yeah.
Truest thing in this whole movie. Tom then proposes a toast to the love interest, and the soldier that was mocking him says he knows the love interest and that she's a whore. Tom begins to yell at him for the insult, but the soldier throws a mug and hits Tom right in the forehead, and Tom falls to the ground. A barmaid pronounces him dead, and the soldier is arrested.
And he's going to be hanged.
I mean, if someone lightly getting off a horse can break your arm, the force with which this impacted his skull sort of, like, blown his entire skeleton out of his body. And the soldier is arrested to be hanged. Then we get a quick scene of the love interest escaping the tower via bedsheets and stealing a horse. Did you notice that this scene was repeated?
Yes.
Yeah, we see her, the bedsheets falling out of the, someone running up to the base of the window, bedsheets falling out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut back to the person running up to the window and the bedsheets being thrown out again.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
I'm surprised, like, now that this is, like, digitized, I'm surprised that nobody went back and edited that out.
Because no one in the entire world cares about this movie enough.
Fair point.
Somebody probably thought about it for 5 seconds and then said,
too much effort.
I would rather do literally anything else in the world. So she steals a horse and her maid leaves with her. And then we're back to the inn where Tom is very much not dead and being woken up by the woman who runs the inn as she loudly complains about the soldiers leaving without paying their bill because the locked up soldier who is to be hanged escaped in the night somehow. No explanation for why Tom is alive, why she said he was dead. You want to know why? Fuck you. That's why.
Hey, be nice to me.
That is the movie.
I know.
I'm interpreting for the movie. Tom offers to cover the bill, but then finds out that his money has been stolen, which starts another cacophonous shouting scene. Where, and while Tom screams at the lady and the lady screams at Tom, at one point Tom just looks directly at the camera and says, Did you see who stole the money? It's even funnier the 12th time, movie. Keep it up. Let's get it at least 20 more times.
Yeah. I wonder if we're actually meant to, if you actually see the person who steals the money.
Maybe.
I'm not going back to see it,
nope,
though.
Nope, I've watched this movie twice, which is 3 times too much. Tom is then chased out of the inn. Back to Isaac being yelled at by his sister, again, about love interest escaping, and so they both set off after her. Jump to love interest and her maid arriving at the inn Tom was just at and also being chased off after mentioning Tom. The scene goes on to wait for fucking long and they just get chased out. Then we rejoin Tom on the road as he stumbles across the escaped soldier who is trying to hang a woman on a tree branch.
He's got her by, like, he's got her hands.
It's around her neck.
Oh, it's around her neck.
It's around her neck. He's trying to hang her over this tree branch. We just stumble upon this scene, never get any explanation for it. Her bodice is ripped.
I thought we were just, you know, stumbling upon some BDSM shit.
He's either trying to rape or murder her.
Both, maybe.
Yeah. Tom runs up and throws his walking stick at him in the most... It just, like, bounces off the ground. It's the most limp attack I've ever seen put on film. But the man does run. And then the two have a incredibly poorly choreographed fight, which ends with Tom poised above the deserter with sword in hand. This was... Oh, my God. The majority of it is... just them slowly circling around each other, and then at some point Tom like falls onto the ground and has to like slowly scoot backwards, and the soldier is just like savoring the moment as he slowly creeps up with the sword pointed. You get close up shots of the blade being inches from Tom's face, but it just everything in this movie just takes so goddamn long. It gets to a point where it stops being intimidating. If somebody just holds a sword in your face for 5 minutes, like, goddamn, man, shit, or get off the pot. I'm getting bored. Just kill me already. But Tom throws dirt in his face and then gets the sword from him. And then he shoves it down and you see the lady's watching the fight. And she gasps as if he stabbed him. But you see he's just shoved it between the guy's legs.
Yeah.
Should have fucking killed him, but he didn't. After he shoves it between the guy's legs, he goes to tend to the lady, and he offers her his coat to cover her boobs, but she declines. He then offers to escort her to the next town, and she accepts. As they walk, he keeps looking back to check that her cleavage is still on display. It is. And then he hangs his hat on the camera so the audience can't oogle the lady like he's doing. "Not for your eyes," he says. And I would say shatters the fourth wall again, but the fourth wall is just in smoking ruins at this point.
Yeah.
Cut to love interest, who randomly runs into her cousin on the road, because this movie is just a series of insane coincidences. And the cousin is fleeing from her husband. "Never marry an Irishman," the cousin says, "particularly if he is eaten up with jealousy, possessed of a quick temper, and a mighty fool in the bargain."
Yep. That's Mrs. Fitzpatrick.
Yep. Love interest is then invited to stay with her cousin in the city. Swipe cup to two roosters being shoved at each other while a crowd watches. Cockfighting. That's what this movie needed.
Yep.
Camera pans to the right, and we see Tom and the woman he rescued walking towards the crowd and asking for a room. This is the cockfighting's just happening outside an inn, I guess. Then Tom and the lady are sitting together in the dining area, and we get the disgusting food scene.
That was...
They sit.
I don't even have words.
They sit at a small table on opposite sides facing each other. And the joke here is supposed to be that they are clumsily flirting with each other by eating their food sloppily.
Yeah.
So we get damn near 5 minutes of them just sloppily smacking and shoving food into their mouths and just smearing it all over their faces.
Yeah.
Fucking disgusting.
There's meat, there are oysters, which the oyster part was just the most disgusting thing I've seen in that movie. It's like she takes the oyster in her mouth, and then she kind of like brings it to the forefront of her mouth so that it comes out of her lips and then swallows it. It's just fucking disgusting. It looks like a giant, I mean, it's the ocean's boogers.
Yeah, it's
so.
It's my two least favorite kinds of humor mixed together, which are, isn't it funny how awkward these people are being, and isn't it funny how gross this is? No. Every time to both of those questions, here we see them put together, and also combined with just lingering way too long on this unfunny joke.
Yeah. they're making like bedroom eyes at each other and devouring their food as if to like, it's disgusting foreplay.
This is the kind of shit you would see in like a Paul Blart Mall Cop movie or one of the fake movies that Adam Sandler makes for a tax write-off.
Yeah.
This is the most, like, this movie has the humor of a fucking middle schooler. That all gets their furnaces turned up higher, and they go upstairs to do the horizontal monster mash. But then the husband of the love interest cousin comes into the inn and thinks, for no reason, with no evidence, that Tom is sleeping with his wife, and charges into Tom's room, causing all hell to break loose at the inn. Another scene where everyone is screaming their fool heads off.
Well, he's asking if a woman has come by and they tell him that there's only a man and a woman in the inn. He asks for the name of the woman. They say Mrs. Waters. And he says, I bet she gave you a fake name. Something like that.
Oh my God, you can actually parse what the people in this movie are saying?
That's what I understood.
It was such incomprehensible gibberish to me 90% of the time. I had to put on closed captioning for the synopsis because when you're watching it, they talk so fast and the accents are so thick. Everyone talking this movie just sounds like, is there Rob French is going to be a right lot diff around here? That's for true. So the fact
you're not wrong.
The fact that you could get fucking anything out of that mess.
Yeah, I did. There's a lot I didn't understand in this movie because of how they talk, but that I understood.
Yeah, so he charges up, barges into the room. All hell breaks loose, including one servant woman running down the stairs, screaming rape over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then telling a man at the bottom of the stairs that Tom is sleeping with the man's wife, which is overheard by the love interest, who is also in that inn for some reason, because this movie is just insane coincidence after insane coincidence.
Yep.
Upon hearing this, the love interest whispers, "Betrayed!" and faints. Upstairs, Tom and the husband begin to fight, and love interest is picked up off the floor by her maid and cousin, but they leave her a muffler behind on the floor, those little fuzzy hand pockets.
Yep.
The rich ladies put their hands in. Tom then runs from the husband, but then runs into Isaac Newton, and so begins a Benny Hill-style chase around the inn, that thing they do in British...
It speeds up, yeah.
Yes, where they speed up the film, and people just get chased around a location, and the funny music plays.
Yep.
It's harpsichord music in this movie, but when it's Benny Hill stuff, Yes, it's called Yakety Sax.
That actually has a name.
Yes, called Yakety Sax.
All right.
Yep, that. Yeah, they do the Benny Hill thing, and it's just as unfunny as it is in Benny Hill. Tom ultimately escapes by jumping out a window, and another man comes and takes his place in the lady's bed. Because the window he jumps out of is the room he was banging the lady in, he jumps out, and then more people come to the room, and she, like, motions with her eyes that where Tom went.
Yeah, get up.
And I think it might be the husband who gets into her bed.
Yeah, it's Mr. Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, he comes and just puts the candle out beside her bed, and they're boning. Isn't it funny? They're gonna put the thing's gonna go in the thing. Oh, it's hilarious. Then we cut to Isaac and his sister back on the road, but Isaac sees a hunting party in the distance. He sees that same pack of dogs, I'm sure, just running across a field and goes, fuck this, and then goes to hunt, leaving his sister alone. The sister's carriage keeps going because Isaac's on a horse and she's a proper, you know, school marm, high side lady. She's got fucking servants and suitcases and a whole fucking carriage. The carriage turns the next corner and comes upon a man on horseback holding a gun. "Stand and deliver," he shouts unconvincingly. The sister reprimands him for being rude and tells the driver to continue. She goes like, "Deliver what? I am not a midwife. What are you talking about, sir? I will not deliver anything." And keep going, Reginald. And the man on the horse doesn't react at all. He has, like, this blank look on his face, and he just keeps repeating, "Stand and deliver." I thought he was a fucking ghost or something. Just big owl eyes. Ay, ay, ay.
That's Mr. Partridge.
Spoilers!
Sorry!
Spoilers. Sorry. Audience, you didn't hear that. He's a ghost.
He's a ghost.
He's a ghost!
Sorry.
He's the ghost of everyone that died up to this point in the fucking movie.
They don't remember who Mr. Partridge is.
Jump to Tom walking down a dirt road, smelling the muff he's carrying, which sounds dirtier than it is, and running into the same bandit Isaac's sister did. He left that in before they did.
Yes. They're stop trying to look for logic in this movie. There is none.
I know. It's my fault for caring. But whatever. Whatever. The movie doesn't care. Why should I?
I find it so funny here that, you know, usually you enjoy things that are, like, movies that are a little bit more on the, like, ridiculous side, and I don't enjoy them, and then this one is driving you nuts.
I like intentional, stylish in absurdity. This is just fucking incompetence.
Yeah, it's just a pile of shit.
Yeah. This was not a choice. This was people who didn't know what the fuck they were doing. So he manages to wrestle the gun away from the bandit, who begs for mercy and tells Tom his sad backstory, through which we learn that the bandit is the barber who was thrown out of Allworthy's home for allegedly being the father of Tom Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Upon hearing this, Tom shouts, "Father!" grabs the man and kisses him on the mouth. You thought the family smooching was over?
Yeah.
Nope, this is just a, like...
It just comes back to haunt you.
This is just the greatest hits of all the shittiness we've seen in the past. The misogyny, the school marm, the kissing your family on the mouth, the animal abuse. Like, here it is. Our glorious ugly past, all in one shitty package.
I'm surprised this even passed, like, the Hays Code or anything, because... The Hays Code is still in place until 68, I believe. And then this, like, you're kissing another man on the mouth?
Well, I know exactly why it got by. It's because it's being done for immature laughs.
Mm.
If there was actual genuine human emotion in a man-on-man kiss, that's too far.
It's not a romantic, same-sex couple.
It's not a romantic kiss. Yeah. It's just a goofy thing.
Mm.
We can laugh at it. We can't actually let it happen genuinely. This movie fucking sucks.
Yep.
The bandit then tells him the accusation wasn't true, so he's not his dad anyway. He will be Tom's servant, though, and suggests they go see a lady in London who could get Tom back in the good graces of Allworthy, because a fucking highwayman has connections with the upper society in London?
Yeah.
They arrive in London... And coincidentally, the woman the servant is talking about is the love interest's cousin. Who won't see Tom, though. And she's telling this to a middle-aged, high-class woman she's having tea with. She talks about, oh, this brute has been bothering me for weeks and he hangs out outside my window. And then the middle-aged woman looks out the window and goes, oh, but he's such a hot stud.
Yeah. He's a good-looking fellow.
Yep. I'd buy that for a dollar. Give you a nickel to tickle his pickle. And then an invitation is sent to Tom to attend a masked ball by the middle-aged lady. Spinning swipe cut. This is the one that looks like a pinwheel. Yep. Swipe cut. To the masked ball, where we see people in wigs, masks, and fancy clothing dancing in a courtyard. It's a very small courtyard. They're very cheap costumes and wigs.
Yeah.
Isaac and his sister are also at the dance because everyone is everywhere at all times in this movie. And they bitch at each other like they always do. The school marm is wearing a beaked mask, and Sir Isaac is wearing an elephant mask.
Yeah, he's wearing like an elephant tusk mask.
He makes some misogynistic comment about women taking over and says, this shall happen over my trunk or something.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious. Then the woman who sent Tom the invitation finds him at the dance and asks if he hooks up with women a lot. Tom says when his head, or excuse me, when his heart is captured, his body soon follows. And she replies that she hopes he doesn't follow her, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Mm. And they have this conversation while they're dancing.
Yeah.
And, like, moving in and out and doing all kinds of, like, dancing in a line and stuff. She leaves, he follows, they bang. Shocking. Swipe cut, and the narrator tells us that Lady Bellaston, that is the middle-aged woman's name, has mm-hmm. now become Tom's sugar mama. And she's just sending... We see Tom in a room just stuffed with packages, and he's getting fancy clothes and proper wigs, and, you know, she has to make him proper so she won't be embarrassed when she sees... seen with him in public, right? Yeah. We also learn that love interest is staying with Lady Bellaston.
Yeah.
This entire universe consists of five people. And they all know each other. And she is being courted by some rando we've never seen before.
Then the rando, I believe, that's the man, that's the actor who played the dad in Mary Poppins.
He kind of looks like Mr. Bean in a powdered wig.
Yeah.
But then again, everyone in this movie kind of looks like Mr. Bean in a powdered wig, so... Then Tom, sitting in a chair in Bellaston's palatial estate, does some cocaine, which makes him sneeze.
Mm-hmm. And it makes his voice also sound weird. Like, he speaks slowly.
Well, he's trying to hold back the sneeze.
Oh.
Then love interest comes into the same room, and he tries to make up with her and apologize, but he just can't stop sneezing. So the joke here is, in case you missed it, it's very subtle. The joke is that you're not supposed to sneeze when you're talking to a pretty lady. How outrageous. I want to die.
Keep going.
Woo! She rejects his apology. Then we get a quick scene of the rando who was courting her, talking to Bellaston, who tells him if he wants her, he shall have her.
Uh-huh.
And to be more forceful.
Is this the scene?
Nope, we're not there yet. I know exactly what you're saying. Pump the brakes.
I'm glad I didn't go further.
Yep. Then we jump to the love interest maid bringing a letter to Tom, and Tom pulling her into his room and making her hide behind a curtain because he hears Bellaston walking up. Then he drags Bellaston into the room and makes out with her to distract her so the maid can sneak out. And then the making out leads to boning, and we jump to the two of them in bed. As Tom tries to read the letter the maid gave him without Bellaston noticing,
mm-hmm.
just fucking wait 5 minutes till she's gone, Tom.
Yeah, or just wait until she falls asleep.
I also hate contrived, awkward situations where the contrivance is somebody can't wait 5 fucking seconds to do the thing they want to do. You don't even have to wait for her to leave. You are post-coitus, Tom. Just wait for her to fall asleep.
Yeah.
The letter says that Tom and love interest shouldn't meet again for reasons. It's not even that he's been wenching his way up and down the countryside. It's that if high society sees them together, Tom will get in trouble, I think is the reason. I don't.
Well, he's been banished from Allworthy's house, so he's not supposed to be anywhere near high society, I guess.
Your guess is as good as mine. Then we see the rando playing cards with love interest and trying to touch her leg under the table as she repeatedly smacks his hand away. Then we see the rando being told by Bellaston to be more forceful in his approach. Are you frightened by the word rape? She asks.
At what point I turned to you and I was like, did I hear what I think I heard?
Yeah, is this reality? Is this real? Holy shit!
Yeah, because we've seen rape before. Seen is a big word. It's been hinted at before in Gone with the Wind, but this one here is like just straight out suggesting it.
Yeah, just straight out.
inviting him to do it.
You want that lady? Rape her. Jesus.
Yep.
Like, people in the 1700s were monsters. They were just fucking monsters.
Yep. And I'm not suggesting that I'm not even gonna go on with this thought.
It's the abyss.
It's the abyss.
It's the abyss. This movie is the abyss. This is supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a comedy.
There was something that just like rubbed me the wrong way about the fact that it's also a lady suggesting
it. A woman saying it?
Yeah. I mean, because it's the kind of thing you expect from a man anyway in this time period, but the fact that it's a lady suggesting that somebody rapes another woman, it just, at this time period, she's most likely had it happen to her, but she is suggesting that, I don't know, there's something, it's, just something cruel and it just is, vile.
It's the casual cruelty of everyone in this movie. There is no humanity or empathy in any of these characters. And it's played up for laughs.
Yeah. Knowing that women in this time period already have so little, what's the word I'm looking
agency?
For? Yeah, agency over their own body. And then you have somebody like that who just goes on and just off puts rape on the table for this man.
Yeah.
It's fucking disgusting.
As if it's the proper thing to do.
Yeah.
The insinuation she's saying is, well, are you a coward?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gross. Then we get a scene of the rando attempting to rape the love interest.
Yeah, he's been given permission.
Are we laughing yet, audience? This is a comedy. Apparently. Yeah, he like throws himself on, just forces himself on her. They end up like on the ground with him on top of her.
Yeah.
Awful. Awful. Isaac Newton comes upon the scene, yells at the rando, not enough though, for what he's doing, and then throws love interest over his shoulder and carries her out. It was more about his like daughter being insulted and like, you're not good enough for my daughter. Like, he didn't really seem to mind the rape part. It was that the person doing the raping wasn't rich enough.
I mean, every time we see this man beforehand when he's in the field working around the animals, there's always like a maid that he's chasing around or like putting on the hay because he's about to bang her.
Yes,
so
he's done this to women himself.
Yes.
Yep. Then we're back with Tom and his servant as Tom complains that he doesn't know how to break things off with Bellaston. Propose marriage, suggests the servant. The fucking tangled web these people weave. Like, they have to do everything in a way that will just cause more misunderstandings.
Yes.
This movie is the peak of just use your fucking words.
The reasoning here is that she has money and she would never accept marriage from a man like from Tom Jones.
She'll think he's just trying to take advantage of her and break things off.
Yeah.
Just say you don't want to bang her anymore, Tom. Christ.
But if he says he doesn't want to bang her anymore, he doesn't have access to her money anymore.
Yep.
So this is an advantage for him.
Jump to Bellaston having tea with Isaac's sister because everyone knows everyone and showing her Tom's letter proposing marriage. The sister, the schoolmarm, takes it so she can show it to the love interest.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. Of course, everybody knows everybody here. Bellaston knows Mrs. Fitzpatrick, who's Sophie's cousin.
Because they're family?
And, yeah. And the schoolmarm is Sophie's aunt. So they have their little circle.
But how does Miss Bellist fit into this? She's just a friend of the cousin? So she's a friend of... Okay.
She's a friend of the cousin. She's an acquaintance of the family.
Okay. Okay. I don't like it, but I'll buy it. Cut to Tom getting a letter from the love interest saying he sucks and she never wants to see him again. I concur. In the morning, Tom sets off to talk to the love interest cousin about it, narrowly missing the arrival of Allworthy and nephew in London. As Tom leaves the cousin's manor, where she also implied that she wanted to bang Tom as well.
Sure.
But we will talk about this tomorrow, because every person with a vagoo that meets Tom wants to bang him, because he's just so much of a goddamn hunk. As he leaves the cousin's manor, he runs into the husband that barged into the inn before, who for no reason decides that Tom was banging his wife after all, and fights Tom in a sword duel.
Almost there.
My sanity is hanging on by the barest thread. They bump into each other and he goes, "Wait a minute. You bang my wife! Fuck you!" And grabs a sword. And it gets even stupider. This was a better duel than the one with the soldier, at least. Mm-hmm. There were some proper, like, not Pirates of the Caribbean on that level, but in that style of, like, swashbuckling, like, sword play back and forth. They go into a covered hallway and just go back and forth a little bit, and then the duel ends with Tom stabbing the husband in the gut, and then a crowd gathers around, and two men in the crowd say that Tom was mugging the husband with no evidence, which is enough to get Tom arrested, and nephew is delighted because he set the whole thing up? How? How did he know Tom was going to be here? How did he know the husband was going to bump into him? How did he know Tom was going to win the fucking duel?
The two guy who say that Tom was mugging the husband.
He hired them to say that.
Yeah, but he hired them, like, way ahead of time. Like, this isn't the first scene where we see them. They are present back at the inn where Mr. Fitzpatrick barged in. And they also work with the same guy who gave him the letter at his mom's funeral.
Are we to believe that nephew directed the husband there at that time?
No, I just set up the whole
okay.
I believe that they are following Tom Jones until he does something stupid and they can make some shit up.
There is a rule in fiction where you are allowed one insane happenstance per story. This movie is just insane happenstance after insane happenstance.
I know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, like, these people, we've seen them before.
We have seen.
And they are following Tom.
And we know they're bad because one has an eye patch and the other's got a scar. They are no good because they're physically ugly. So Tom is arrested, and then the nephew goes to tell Allworthy what is happening. And then we get scenes in the prison as a sad song plays. Fuck you, movie, expecting me to have any sort of genuine sympathy or emotion after you have displayed nothing but cruelty and disregard through this entire movie. Now we're supposed to care about these people in prison?
Tom Jones is about to be hanged as an innocent man.
I don't give a shit.
I don't either.
Good fucking riddance. That means this movie would be over and we'd escape. Then, in another series of insane coincidences, the woman taking care of the wounded husband turns out to be the woman that Tom saved from being hung.
Mrs. Waters.
Who also, she turns out to be the woman who was thrown out of Allworthy's for being Tom's father.
Jenny Jones. Mrs. Waters and Jenny Jones are the same person.
Yes. Who, I confused her for Mrs. Bellstrom. I thought they were the same woman.
Belston,
because Belston wears a wig.
Yeah.
Sometimes, but sometimes she doesn't have the wig, so her hair's a different color.
Yes.
Which is the same color as this lady.
Yes.
Who's a different lady.
Yeah.
But their faces are exactly the same.
No, they're not.
To me, they are.
They're not. Mrs. Bellston is way skinnier than Jenny Jones.
If you say so.
Anyway, this is the point where she is revealed to be Jenny Jones. In my head, I was like, did he bang his mother?
Yes, which means from the audience's point of view that Tom Jones is screwing his mom.
Yep.
Comedy. figure this out because Tom's servant, who was supposed to be his father, runs into her and he's like, oh, you got thrown out along with me. And
yeah.
And then they figure the whole thing out. So Tom's servant, his fake dad, brings his alleged mom to Allworthy. And then she tells Allworthy that Allworthy's sister wrote a letter for him before she died. As they leave the room where they were talking together, they run immediately into Allworthy's steward, who is the man that Nephew gave the letter to at the funeral.
Who is the man who gave the letter to Nephew.
Yes, who gave the letter to Nephew. Not the one who got the letter. You're right.
Yes.
My mind is scrambled eggs. I'm sorry. I'm hanging on as best I can. They also do another lame comedy bit while the mom is talking to Allworthy because they go in and close the doors, and then the fake dad and a different servant just hang out outside the doors eavesdropping.
Yeah.
And you get just static shots, just freeze frame of them like with their ears to the door and then
reacting
to what they hear. Cut to another freeze frame of them in a different pose reacting. Cut to another freeze frame of them in a different pose reacting and being scandalized. And yeah. Jokes.
Fun.
Fun. Humorous japes. Allworthy finds his nephew and tells him to find the letter, then heads off to save Tom from being hanged. On his way, he is stopped by Isaac, and while the two talk, in the background, the woman who was going to be hanged, aka the woman we think that is Tom's mother, turns to the camera, looks directly at it, and just speaks to the audience, telling us what Allworthy and Isaac are talking about. Which to amounts to that the charges against Tom are being dropped and that Allworthy's sister is Tom's real mother, allowing Tom to be Allworthy's proper heir.
Thank God Tom didn't fuck his mom.
Yes, he didn't fuck his mom, but she knew that immediately. She always knew she wasn't his mom.
Yes.
But the audience doesn't know that. And when the audience first receives the implication that he might have been fucking his mom,
yeah,
she is in the scene and she turns and looks at the cameras and gives a little like, well, what are you gonna do? Shrug at the camera. Fuck! She knew, we didn't, and that was aimed directly at us.
Yep.
Holy shit, I can't believe this movie exists. Sir Isaac Newton is delighted by this news because it means he's going to get to be part of the estate if the love interest marries Tom now.
Yes.
It all works out. Jump to the execution, where the soldier in charge is the one who threw the mug at Tom. Because there's 5 people in the entire universe in this movie. The sad song plays again as Tom is carted towards the gallows. I'm sorry, why was he the one in charge of this?
I don't know.
It adds nothing to the plot.
Well, he gets a revenge. He's the one in charge of it because this might be his moment to get revenge on Tom.
Yeah, it's solely for the purpose of so he can look at Tom as he's about to be hanged and say, better luck next time, and swirl his fucking cartoon mustache. Yeah,
that's the only purpose.
Oh my God. The sad song plays again as Tom is carted towards the gallows, and we see Allworthy at the jail, finding out that he's arrived at the jail too late. Tom's already left. There are so many fucking scenes in this movie. They're so fucking pointless and could be cut out.
Keep going.
I know, we're almost there. The noose is put around Tom's neck. Yes, yes, the audience screams.
Do it.
Do it. Knife that bitch. A drum roll is played as the crowd watches, because this is Europe, this is public execution, of course.
Yeah.
We have no TV, this is entertainment.
I mean, at least he was going to get hanged and not guillotined.
I'd rather get guillotined, probably, it's quicker.
Yeah, but it's a lot more gruesome.
It's quicker, I don't want to choke to death, it's a bad way to go. And the cart holding Tom up is moved away. Tom dangles for a second, we see his legs kicking, this is a comedy. Until Isaac Newton and his horse teleport underneath him and cut him down as the crowd cheers. This is edited so poorly. It just seems like he teleports underneath him, chops the rope, and then runs away. Yep. He's not part of the crowd. He's not anywhere within 50 fucking miles of Tom. All of a sudden, he's underneath him with a horse and a sword.
Do not look for logic.
I can't. It's how the world is supposed to work.
Yep. Yeah, supposed to. It's, important word.
It's supposed to be like the framework that holds stories up. And there's nothing. This movie's just a lifeless blob. Chaos. And he rides away with Tom. He takes him to Allworthy, who explains that Tom is his nephew. They embrace, but Isaac breaks them apart and tells Tom to go bang his daughter already. Sick of this shit. Tom runs into the house and smooches love interest, who has apparently forgiven him for everything for no fucking reason. The end.
You know what also just occurred to me? That even though Tom is actually Allworthy's nephew, he also doesn't have a dad.
They never say who the dad is.
They never say who the dad is. Clearly, his mom was married before because she has Mr. Blifil. But also, if she was married before, why is she not Mrs. Blifil? She's still Mrs. Allworthy. So,
well, it says Blifil on her coffin.
Oh, it does?
Yeah. I noticed something on that you didn't. Yep.
On the cast list, she's listed as Miss Bridget Allworthy.
I couldn't tell anyone apart in this movie. Maybe there was a Mrs. Allworthy at some point.
No, because Squire Allworthy isn't married.
Okay.
So.
But this also means that Tom is at least the nephew's half-brother.
Yes, you know, but it also means that no matter what, Tom is still a bastard.
Yeah. Well, related to his sister at least, that puts him up in the station, and he likes Tom more than he does nephew, so Tom gets to be the real nephew. And
yeah.
Fuck, man.
Anyway.
What'd you think of Tom Jones?
There should be a special place in hell for this movie.
For real?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
This,
like I said earlier, this is not art. This is not beautiful. This is not well thought. This is a worthless pile of shit.
It's like every once in a decade, the pressure that the Academy feels to keep up their pretense of being high society just breaks them mentally, and they lose their mind, rip their clothes off, and just take a massive steaming shit on the floor.
Yep. And this was this decade's. I hope this is the only one in this decade.
And
because
then they put back on their fancy clothes, sweep the shit under the rug, and everyone pretends like it never happened. And this decade's pile of shit is Tom Jones.
Yep. There was nothing artistic about this movie. There's a couple shots.
No.
But there's not much. The second sword sequence is, like, there's a couple shots that are cool.
That
but
approach being competent. Which is the best you can say about anything in this movie, but so far overshadowed by just the unapologetic shittiness of everyone and everything. Like, I don't want to beat a dead horse, because there's been way too much animal abuse already in this movie, but oh my god.
We didn't talk about this. We didn't really talk about Sophie because she's really a non-character in this movie.
No, she's nothing.
But it's like she never learns also. She is being shown how shitty Tom is and how much of a womanizer he is. And he's constantly chasing skirts and fucking everything that moves. And every time he does something remotely nice, she just like sort of takes him back and forgives everything.
Yeah, she is made aware of every single woman he bones. Like, her nose is rubbed in it the entire movie. And then at the end, it's just like, oh, buddy's handsome and I want to bone him too, I guess.
I was almost hoping when they're in that inn and with the soldiers that the guy was actually talking about Sophie and that she had actually been boning everything that moved also on her own in France.
That would have been a funny twist.
That would have been a funny twist. That, you know, that she was also as horny as he was.
and we haven't talked about it because I cut out so much shit for the synopsis, but the transitions in this movie are fucking schizophrenic.
Yeah.
It's... The editing is so bad, they won't stay on on any given scene for more than like 10 seconds, and you just jump from like being mugged to woman being hanged to meeting soldiers to cockfight to hunting to robber on the road to it's just bam, 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 just one random thing to the next, and none of it makes any sense. But then you have the scenes that just drag on for way too fucking long. So it's either rapid fire schizophrenic cuts or just long, miserable, just watching British people squawk at each other, basically.
Yeah. I don't understand how this won a Best Picture or Best Screenplay based on another medium.
I know exactly how it does because of the bawdy humor. Like, that is literally the only reason it won, I believe, is because censorship standards are loosening at this point, and... They figured out you can take the clothes off. You can almost see a boob. Did you see the movie where you could almost see a boob, Reginald? I want to see more boobs. We should reward this so we can see more boobs.
Yeah, but then actually show us boobs and butts. And yeah,
it's infuriating, A, because it won based off just on the stupid juvenile smut stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then doubly offensive because the juvenile smut stuff isn't even that fucking smutty.
I have no objection to what you're saying.
It's like every decision this movie has to make, it goes, what's the worst, most infuriating decision we could choose?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with the director when he said that this movie was botched in its execution. Like, there's no... I don't think that there's a better way to describe it.
This... It's not just a black mark on his career. This movie is so bad, this is a black mark on the record of our species. Holy fuck! There's nothing here. And the definition of pornography is sexual content with no artistic merit.
Mm-hmm.
And this somehow manages to fit the definition of pornography
without actually being pornography.
Without having a single naked person in it. How did this happen?
I didn't know that this was the definition of pornography.
Yes, it's funny because most modern commercials fit that definition.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's like, I don't want to wallow in it, but also I don't want this movie to get away with what it is.
And somehow, if I remember well, I think this was selected in like either in 1995 or in 1999 for... preservation by the Library of Congress.
Well, that's a, like, lest we forget our crimes kind of thing.
Yeah. And it also, 1999, it was declared the, on a list of 100 movies, it was declared the 50th best British comedy. Or 51st. My bad.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Man, this is like the kind of thing that you use to weed out people you don't want to be friends with.
You just show them.
You show them this, and if they laugh once, like, no, that done.
Get out.
Yeah, that is a point of no return.
I've already put it on my list.
You're putting it's still better than Hamlet to you? I don't fucking know, man. Hamlet was bad, but there wasn't animal abuse in it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Like, Hamlet was bad, but there was actual real cruelty in this. If you had told me after we watched Hamlet that there was going to be a worse movie than that in this project, I would have shuddered.
Even the one way down the line that we're not going to name now, you think is going to go above Hamlet?
I was so young and naive when I saw that movie. I had no concept of how bad movies could be.
All right.
This project has been a learning experience and has opened my eyes to the true depth of depravity that my species is capable of.
So, sitting at the bottom of my list, number 36, Tom Jones.
Yes, bottom of the list. Fuck you, Tom Jones, and everyone involved in this travesty of a movie. I feel so bad for that dog.
Yeah, even if it was just water like that. No, it wasn't called for.
Oh, we forgot to even mention there's a quick scene during the hunt where they do a close-up shot of the horse's flank. And with... I hope to God is fake blood because they're spurring the horse so much.
Yeah.
They're...
It did look like fake blood, honestly. It did look like ketchup.
I hope. Man, they think the fact that these English people are so awful is funny, and man, it's not. It's just depressing.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about this anymore.
No, we've given it already way too much thought and time.
Yeah. Fucking die in a fire, Tom Jones. Holy shit. Anything else?
Next week's movie is... Well, not next week's, because...
Oh, that's right.
Work.
This is the end of the summer. So we're going back to our every other week schedule.
Yes. So in 2 weeks' time, My Fair Lady.
Which is a retelling of Gigi.
Yep. Done by the same people.
Oh my God. How deep does this pit go?
I also believe that this is an adaptation of a novel or an opera or whatever the fuck it is, but it's coming from other materials. So.
Does it even have a bottom? Are we just falling forever?
Only time will tell.
Help!
So, see you in 2 weeks, hopefully.
I thought I knew. Audience, I thought I knew. I was so naive, I didn't. Thank you for listening. Run while you can.
Hopefully the next movie will be better than this one.
Goodbye.
Bye. Help us.
Okay, that's it.